You know, we're a smaller podcast. There's not going to be that many people watching. Most will see this afterwards. So, well, let me grab this thing here. Thanks for coming on. I was talking to Dennis. You know, I'm going to let you say your last name, so I'll probably screw it up. But we're talking to Dennis, and he actually has a very active Twitter account, and he's been covering what's happening on the Polish border. So, here in this country, America, as we are becoming more and more aware of border issues because we have our own, I guess this is something that's new for Americans to be thinking about. And when I look at what's happening in Poland, the border issues that are happening there, I am astounded at that. I know there is some news coverage, but I think there's a lot more going on than we probably are aware of. And I'm really trying to connect with people like you to find out, hey, who are actually seeing this and are much more aware, what is actually happening there? You know, really, it is the, you could say, citizen journalist these days that is the one who's really, you know, shedding light on things. So thanks, Dennis, for being on the show today and talking to us a bit about it. Could you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and then kind of give us an idea, like some groundwork as to the, you know, who's in play right now at that border and what you've seen going on?
So the issue at the border, it's really unprecedented. So many people do not appreciate the fact, but it is somebody very, very smart invented the whole thing, I think, because nobody before on such a scale instrumentalized the migration. So people now are struggling with the term, what's going on their Poland-Belarus border. Is it a migration crisis? Is it a hybrid warfare against the EU? People are really not yet found the common term how to call it. It's something really new. So the thing which is happening, like in brief, that Belarus strongman, his name is Alexander Lukashenko. He remains in power for more than 26 years, I believe. So for some like incredibly long amount of time. So he actually takes people from a number of different countries and bring them into Belarus. I mean, not literally, but like colloquially speaking, what's going on? So he created preconditions so people do come to Belarus without any other reason, but like being invited to go there, rather being incentivized to go there, I should say. So people come because the incentives appears which were not there before. Yeah. So, and the Belarus, it's not a part of the European Union, but Belarus, it's on the border with the European Union. So if people fly to the Minsk themselves, but then the Belarusian service them quite literally, they bring them to the very border. And there are details like how it's working in details. We can discuss it later, I believe. But the big picture, it's like somebody artificially creating this crisis. And I see some kind of struggle how Poland and the EU in general, how Germany find the proper way to respond to that crisis. And it is sort of understandable because, again, somebody found a way how migration can be used as a sort of like hybrid warfare to undermine the state. And this is very dangerous. Whatever. So I just want to say it so you understand the stakes. Whatever the decisions people make on both sides, in Belarus, in Russia, and in the EU on the other side, it set a precedent for the future. If this migration crisis will not be solved, then this the same situation can resurface everywhere. And if this hybrid warfare works this time, it might reappear, let's say, in US. Why not? Because it's so what we're dealing with is something very new. And regarding myself, I'm actually I don't have an education like of a journalist, but I just kind of got to hooked up to this whole situation. I'm actually out of that region, so I'm residing in Brussels in Belgium, but I'm originally from that area, and coincidentally I lived and visited like many places along this very border. So I have relatives in Poland, in Lithuania, and I'm myself from Belarus originally, and I like lived there for years, and I think I kind of can relate to the situation.
No, it makes
sense.
So
that's in some, yeah, I think this covers the question.
No, it makes sense. And I'll just, while I have the screen shared, I have a map here, because I know people will say, it'd be great if you had a map up so we could see it. Well, there's a map. And then, of course, here is your Twitter account. And definitely people should, you know, go follow this, DEN_2042. You're definitely putting out, I've been watching a lot of people who are tweeting, and you know, your tweets caught my eye, because you're keeping up with what's going on. And that's of course a good thing. Cause yeah, you know, this, I think it's, you know, over here in America where people are noticing this, and there is a little bit of that collective memory of World War II, because you had Hitler and Stalin kind of high-fived in the middle of Poland, and then the Germans went east, and then the Russians came back and went west. It kind of got run over a few times. And so it just seems that Poland would take their borders somewhat seriously. They wouldn't, it just seems like there is that memory of the past, you know. And so you did mention in Belarus, where do you think, or where have you seen that possibly the people who are on the border of Poland, do we know who they are? Like, are they coming from many different places? Is there any kind of a generalization as to who is on the border?
Sorry, could you repeat your last question? I hear you.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, I was just saying. So as far as so Belarus, we have, that's, you know, one side of the border, of course, and then Poland is the other. So in Belarus, what's the makeup of the people who are on the border, you know, who want to get into Poland? Are they from everywhere, or is there specific places that they've come from? Oh, can you hear me? Oh, still there? He'll be back. Okay, there you are.
All right. Apparently there are still some issues. So would you mind to repeat the question one more time?
Not a problem at all. Yeah. So, of course, it's the Polish and Belarus border. And do you know where the people have come from who are on the border wanting to get into Poland? Are they from many diverse places, or in general one spot? And then how are they getting there?
So, you mean how they get into the border specifically?
Well, yeah, definitely. I would say, how are they getting to the border? That's definitely one question. How are they getting to the border? Mm-hmm. But then also, do we know who they are? Like, basically, where are they from?
The vast majority of them, as of now, comes from Iraqi Kurdistan. Okay. So it is, paradoxically, it's the most calm area of Iraq somewhere, but still it's very poor area and the people don't have opportunities there. Like many of them are refugees from Syria, but they live there for like 5, 6, 7 years. This whole travel, it's a gamble of their life. So they sell basically like everything which they have, and of course it's still not enough. They borrow then money wherever they can, and they fly to Minsk, and their government of Belarus do make quite a buck on it, on this scheme. So previously the cost of visa was about 100 US dollars more or less, and now it's 1,200 US dollars, so it's like 12 time increase in the cost. So and for them, for these poor people, this money is just like unbelievably high. So it's literally, it's gamble of their life. They put everything what they can to that, to make this bet, and they come to Minsk. And since they came, Minsk is the capital of Belarus. And since they got there, they are at mercy of a dictator. So what's going on practically, the Belarusian service, them, Belarusian servicemen take, actually this part can quite vary. So in some cases it's Belarusian service men who bring them close to the border. In some cases they travel themselves close to the border, so it's like 30, 50 kilometers away from the border. And then the next step is when Belarusian police and security forces are in play. So by law in Belarus, you cannot, as a foreigner, or even as a Belarusian for that matter, you cannot come closer than 30 kilometers to the border. You've got to have special permission for that. If you come closer, which I tried, by the way, without the permission, they would just kind of catch you. And if it's like first time, they gently just escort you away from those 30 kilometers. And I did not try second time, but I believe by the regulations, then can find, they could find you or something like that. So like if the law would apply here in this place, in this case, the people would not be closer than 30 kilometers to the border. So that's one point to appreciate. But like what's going on practically, there are people who have to protect the border, like their security services, they actually bring them to the border. And then there is a flurry of accounts. So I'm not, I will just kind of summarize according to different sources to the best of my understanding what's actually going on. So people are being brought to the very like demarcation line in large groups on military trucks or something like that, and then they are split in smaller groups. So they receive a specific instructions where to cross, and under supervision of the and close participation of the Belarusian security forces, they are being brought like on foot. They go to the areas where they have to cross, and that's how it works. So it's like more like a diffuse process. It's not like because right now like people see a lot of things like there is a migration camp, makeshift camp. There are a bulk of people. In reality, the main events, they take place overnight. So usually overnight, when it's like, sorry for using that expression, under cover of darkness, people just try to sneak through. That's the main thing. Occasionally, like, and most notably, they gather in large groups and they try to break through. But one thing to realize, it's not where the main influx coming from. The main influx is coming from the night little groups which are trying, which take a long distance to walk, which goes into the forest, into the small rivers, like whichever places are not guarded well enough on the other side, and they just kind of go through and through. And the reality is, it does work. So only in this month, more than 1,000 people, if you look at that map, more than 2,000 people made through this border. They made through Poland, and they come to Germany. So more than 2,000 people, they surfaced in Germany. It just in this month, to repeat. So it does work. And if you ask, how do people get let's say Belarus, how they get like more or less like how they bypass entire Poland? So for that, there is a specific network of small smugglers. So and it is being coordinated from the Iraq itself. So the main coordinator remain in Iraq, and if you want to cross the border, you just send him a message like, okay, now I am on Polish side, let's say, or I made it through that border. And then another guy pick you up and just carry you in his truck, like through the entire Poland quickly. So that's how it works. There is a scheme, there is a special network of smugglers, how people make from, let's say, Iraq through Belarus, bypassing, like rather passing through Poland quickly to Germany. So it is a very, again, it is a unique challenge. It's kind of, it is a combination of dictatorial state and the networks, kind of independent networks. And one more kind of interesting thing about the mechanics of how does it work is that there is a lot of great reporting about it, by the way. So how does it work then, that people go there? Like, how does it work financially? Because in the end, you making a bet of your life. You sell everything you have. You borrow the money from whoever you can. How do you trust all this money to some unknown guy who you see for the first time? So you might ask. And the thing how it works in practice, there is another network of financial dealers. So the smuggler in Iraq, he does not receive the money right away. You pay the money to financial dealer, and then that dealer tells smuggler that, okay, I've got the money, and now dealer smuggler helps you. And only after you've got to Germany, you send a message. And actually, the rumor is you've got to send a picture of the place, so that, and only after you've got to Germany, the guy who organized this passage, he received the money. So it's a very sophisticated scheme, and it's there is a lot of work to do, like how to solve this. It's something very new. Greg, I believe you're on mute.
I was. Thank you.
Yeah.
So it's good to know who the people are, because that they are from, well, in general, Iraq, and some are Syrian refugees that lived in Iraq for a while, and now they're finding themselves in Belarus, and they're paying, you know, big dollars to do this. And so it does seem that, would you say the people that are there at the border and want to get across, they are ultimately, it's an act of desperation. They truly are betting everything on a better life. They're risking it all to find a better place to live.
Sorry, for some strange reason, it keeps disappearing when you're talking. So
I
heard this this last part, that whether it's act of desperation.
Yes.
Ah, yeah, okay, so that's what you're asking.
Yeah, it does seem that the people, so now we have an idea of who is at the border, at least the majority. And then with that, it does appear from what you've said that this is an all or nothing play for the people who are at the Polish border trying to get through across to Germany.
Yes, exactly. And it is one important also thing to realize. They are not coming back like in mass. It is, in my impression, at least, they it's just, it's not why they gave everything which they have. They bet everything which they have, and even they bet the things which they don't have. So they borrow the money, and they've got to go there. The promise is like they have to find something, some source of income, and then return the borrowed money. So in the majority of them, they themselves will not go back. They will try like whatever work, like if you look at that map now, they try and just to go like straight to their east. But if that will not work, they will first go north to and then to the east, or to the west, of course. They can go north and then to the west, or they can go south and then to the west. So it's just they're not coming back. I have zero doubt about it.
There'd probably be no way for them to return anyhow. It was always a one-way trip.
So there are currently, and it's just got like news from today. Currently, the government of Iraq, under international pressure, they try to organize the return flights. So the one flight with 376 people had flown from Belarus to Iraq. Today it was the first such case. And in terms of percentage, if you count, like what's the share of the people who are there and who decided to come back, the estimates have arrived. But practically speaking, we're talking about 3-4%. So as of today, like 3-4% of the people who got there after seeing all those horrible conditions, which we can talk through later, I think. But I've seen everything, they decide to come back. So again, it's 3-4% of them as of today. They are desperate. And also a kind of just maybe kind of switching the topic, so
yes.
Because it's a different subject. So I'm talking about the majority, right? So like 99% of them. And again, what I'm saying, it's to the best of my understanding, and but it's based on different sources. There is also an aggressive minority, which are, I'd say, look like physically fit men in the, let's say, 20s, 30s. They know how to break through. They know how to, let's say, throw stone at a Polish policeman. They know how to break through the razored wire with different means. It is very concerning, but the truth of the matter is there are such people as well. So the vast majority are just, I would kind of say, that economic migrants. And there is a minority which is very suspicious. There are uncorroborated reporting that some people were actually trained how to fight under let's say auspices of Putin, but that's uncorroborated. What I see with my own eyes when I see the coverage, I see that the vast majority are peaceful and desperate, and there is a, I would call it like aggressive minority, who the guy, to put it colloquially, the guys simply look dangerous to me. I would not want to meet them at the street yet.
It makes sense. Yeah, there are a lot of reports that we can't be sure of, but I've heard that also, of course, that there are, yeah, you know, who trained them, who are they, etc. That's hard to be sure of, but we can see what they're doing. So we know that it is happening and that they are there, whoever they are, whoever trained them. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the conditions that people are living in. And I imagine if you're building camps and working on getting through one area, when that doesn't work, you're probably going to move your camp or break into smaller pieces and try different areas. So the people are living in absolutely desperate conditions.
Yes, that's exactly the case. So let me start like...
Yes.
Things like shower does not exist. It's just... It's simply not even under discussion, showers. We're talking about the shortage of food. We're talking about the freezing, and people are literally dying because of low temperature. In the last month, at least 11 people, it has been reported, lost their lives because of low temperatures. So in general, it is a very, very dire situation. And the reporting is that the Belarusian servicemen try to make it harder than it is. So they force people, they want
And you're back.
Okay,
you're
sorry.
Back. So, okay. It's so, all right.
So I'm not sure if I'm repeating myself, but
oh no, you're just going over their conditions, and then you were mentioning that the Belarusian military is making it more difficult. Is that what you're saying? Right, exactly. Right as it cut off.
Yes, yes. They deliberately make people desperate. The methods vary, you know. I mean, there are very sophisticated how they do that, but it all boils down to one thing: they make people desperate. The most atrocious cases is like when imagine yourself you are in the forest and you need to charge your phone, and you ask a guy who brought you there, can you charge my phone for me? And he answers, $100 for 20%. So to charge your phone for 20% of battery capacity, you've got to pay $100. Or imagine you don't have food and you ask them, do you guys have food? And in return, what they do, what you're talking about, you've got your food. So they take your food away from you to make you more desperate to cross the border. So, and there is a flurry of reporting like that. So again, the details might vary, but again, the big picture, the military do everything they can so the people have no other choice but to cross the border. And if people try to go back and say, no, enough, I want to go to Minsk, from that demarcation line, if they face, I don't know, the aggressive border guards or dogs or whatever on the other side, and they want to come back, there is overwhelming evidence that what Belarusians actually do, they just physically like keep them in. So they just say, no, you cannot go back. You just, the only option you have, guys, you just have to try to cross. So people are being stranded there for days. There are like 7 attempts of border crossing. It's not a rarity. 7 attempts, it's kind of okay-ish. The record number, it's like 12 attempts. So it's like a football. Like they throw it in one direction, then it goes like, then another side does not accept it. And they still like have no other choice but to try to cross another time. And they physically don't have a choice in many cases. And my understanding, though, so after, let's say, 3 days of such a misery, the scheme works like follow. If you still did not manage to cross, they bring you back somewhere. So we don't see it on TV. So what I'm saying is, like, it's based on the reporting, like, from the ground. So they brought you somewhere in some kind of local hotel or something. So they, you get food, like, but not enough. So not to starve to death, but not being, you know, full. It's just to keep you kind of like functional. And then again, they split the people in small groups and keep on trying like to create this constant, small but constant flow of people through the border.
And that is being orchestrated then by the Belarusian military then, I mean, or at least that is their orders. So that's something really extraordinary to hear, that a military is actually coordinating this, you know, pushing the refugees, you know, against the border, basically, and in a way keeping them sort of stuck in an open air prison. So
that's exactly what they are doing.
Yeah. That's a desperate situation. And then if and when refugees make it into the, you know, across the Polish border, what's their situation when they actually get into Poland?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I think we broke up there for a sec. So once refugees get across the border into Poland, if they make it, what situation do they face then? Can you hear me? You'll be able to hear me eventually. Yeah, let me know when you can hear me. Oh, can you hear me yet? It'll start working eventually. Private chat. Oh, I'll repeat. Yeah, actually, I'm going to type. Dennis will be back. All right. Oh, he'll be back. Let's see, well, we lost Dennis. We'll see if he returns. Look at comments here. Yeah, Terrence mentions a good point. Ask questions not inside your commentary. Yes, that's something I'm very bad at. Thanks for giving me a little bit of discipline there, Terrence. You are a hard man, but you are fair. Okay, let's see. And we'll see if we get Dennis back. Hopefully so. I guess our connection is just not extravagantly perfect. We'll give him a minute. I'll sit here and talk about stuff, and I'll like adjust my camera a little bit. You know, this is live streaming, and I kind of like it. I'd rather just have a little break in the action and have Dennis come back, you know, or we'll just end it right here. We got a lot of good info. We're understanding this more. We can always get together later and, you know, talk more on this stuff. But this has been really informative. you know, I have been following this, you know, the border issue between Belarus and Poland, best that I kind of can. But, you know, I don't trust a lot of the media that I see, and we're really seeing a lot of the same stories over and over again, and many are a bit of conjecture. So, one of the things I'll be doing in the next couple weeks is I have a good number of guests lined up who are in the area who are seeing this a lot more clearly, because I really think that no one's going to know better what's going on than, well, for one thing, people who are from Poland or Belarus or even Germany, people who are from the area and know people that they can talk to there. So, and then no one really knows a location like somebody who's from there. You know, I think you know where you were born best, really, when it comes down to it. So we'll see if we get Dennis back. If not, I'm just going to say that since I have the screen shared here, definitely Dennis, you know, I'll let you read his last name. I'll just screw it up if I say it. But his Twitter is DEN_2042. I'll link that in the show description, of course. He's definitely worth following. There's others also that are good, but this is one person that caught my eye and has, you know, replied to me. A few people actually have replied. And like I say, we'll be getting more people on the show, and I think it's a good thing. I really want to, you know, cover this. I know Radiant Creators is in general about, you know, interviewing. Oh, I had to stream. Dennis is back. Perfect. Yeah. So I was just kind of rambling while I was waiting for you to hop back. I was just telling people about your, you know, Twitter and such like that. And the question I was asking when we got disconnected was, and thanks for coming back, was when refugees make it across the Polish border from Belarus, what situation do they face then?
Sorry, for some reason, when you start talking, I see disruption. I get disruption. Could you, sorry for constantly asking you to repeat the question, but still nevertheless, could you kindly repeat or type it in the question?
Okay. What situation
do you refugees... I heard the part that when the refugees coming back.
Yeah. When refugees get into Poland, what situation do they face? I typed it too.
Okay, so the question is when the refugees make it to Poland, when they face there. It's very tough for them. So currently the Polish government, they introduced a so-called exceptional state or state of exception. So into the area of 3 kilometers to the adjacent to the border, nobody can come in, neither media nor human rights defenders, only military, special forces, and people who live there. So after people make across Poland, they have to go through that 3 kilometers. If they get caught, currently, my understanding, practically speaking, they will be pushed back to Belarus. Currently, Poland issued like, it's not state of emergency, legalistically speaking, but like something akin to state of emergency. So for the sake of the discussion, we can call it like state of the emergency locally in this area. So no media, no human rights defenders. So they have to go through these 3 kilometers. And then it depends. Again, my understanding that the majority of them, they have it kind of prearranged. So after they make it through these 3 kilometers, something from the smuggling network will pick them up and bring them to Germany. So these are kind of, I would say, rich and smart guys. There are many, many, many people who don't have that prearranged. so who use it like on their own, and these are most desperate cases. So if they are lucky enough, sorry, I think my dog is ruining with that. So sorry.
That's fine.
So again, if people without you know, pre-arranging this through smuggling networks, people who don't have enough money, so the most desperate people to start with, if they still make it through, then there are volunteers in the place who assist them to apply for asylum. There is a medical assistance to them, because again, many of them are in desperate condition, in dire conditions after going through this. It's not that easy, you know. You live in the southern state, and then you come to near zero temperature. You live without enough food for, let's say, 1 week, and then even if you found the hole in the barbed wire and you cross to the border, you still have to go like through kilometers through basically nowhere without a direction to avoid getting caught, and then you can make your way further.
It must be unsettling for people in Poland to know that there's human traffickers acting within their borders, that you could say, you know, I'll call them human traffickers who are helping the refugees get through Belarus into Poland. But then you realize, if you're living in Poland, that that same network exists within your country.
To my surprise, to my astonishment, I would say even, it is the issue remained unaddressed. So first I read about it actually in the publication of the Polish Gazeta Wyborcza. It's one of the main newspapers there. And they made an excellent reporting. So they went to Iraq, they contact the people who want to go through that route. They contact the smugglers, they contact the airlines, they checked how visa costs, so they checked everything. And the second best reporting, by the way, was made, in my kind of view, was made by New York Times. So they collaborated because there is a local bureau there for New York Times. So, but sorry for Derek. Sorry for digression. So to my astonishment, this topic of smuggling network inside Poland has not been addressed like properly. People are discussing like, should we help migrants? The society, it's very deeply divided. There are some people who say that we should accept migrants unconditionally, just being humans. There are people who say that we cannot do that. We've got to be tough, like, because the rationale is like, if we accept, let's say, 100, then 100, let's say, many more thousands will come next week. That's how the logic goes. But again, as far as I know, people do not discuss the problem of the smuggling network inside, like, at least the media do not discuss it much. Having said that, though, there are reports like that the security forces, they keep on like arresting these people. So there are basically on a weekly basis, there are reports from the security forces inside Poland. So they do arrest the smugglers, or so they pay attention to that. What I'm saying is that in the public sphere, there is not too much discussion on the subject for some reason.
And I typed the question in too, since it's are the Polish border guards using restraint towards the refugees? We hear lots of reports that they are and that they are not. In general, I haven't seen anything too violent. I'm not sure how you defend a border without some force.
It is the most problematic part of this story, I would say. And the truth is, we don't know. There are three kilometers along the border, which is where the media do not have access. Where the independent media do not have access. So whatever we see, we cannot like verify it independently. So on one side, we see, practically speaking, we see the reports from the services. So of course they portray themselves as entirely to the letter of the law and everything, and even excelling. And we see, on the other hand, the Belarusian propaganda sources, which portrays such situations when there are a conflict or a harsh reaction to something like that. So, and what's the proportion of these two? Where is the truth? Is it in the middle? Is it on the one hand? Is it on the other hand? We simply don't know. So the treatment of the people on the Polish side inside these 3 kilometers, strictly speaking, we don't have the reliable information. If you kind of compare mistreatment of people on the Polish side and on Belarusian side, it is incomparable. There isn't overwhelming evidence that on Belarusian side they deprive people of food, they beat people to make them to go through. And on Polish side, for sure there is nothing such on terrible scale like that. They're not even close. So there are incomparable things. But still, it's kind of frustrating that we don't have access, independent media to show what's actually happening on the ground. We also have a better coverage from the Belarusian side because people are simply stuck there. So, and there are moments when they stuck, they do make a video, so they share, they talk to reporters, so they simply have time for that. But there is another, once you cross, your concern, it's not to tell your story to report to you, your concern is to make the shelter, to apply for asylum. So it's just this part of the journey is kind of lost. The best known part, it's the most privileged one. So those who are brought to Germany by smugglers, but those who kind of poor, who did not have enough money to pay the smugglers, who tried to make it on their own, this story is untold. So I think later over the course of time, people will gather this information.
It makes sense. So the ones with less or no money apply for asylum, and then the more wealthy refugees that are coming across, do they apply for asylum and then get picked up by smugglers, or do they just go straight to the smugglers and then end up in Germany?
So practically speaking, how it works, once you set your foot beyond this 3 kilometer zone in Poland, you got to picked up by some random truck, which is not passenger truck, of course. It's delivery truck or something like that. It's in miserable condition. My understanding, it you're fully packed with other people. You don't stop even for the toilet because you're afraid to get caught. You stop maybe once for the toilet, practically speaking, but it's not I want to stop. And no, it does not work like that. It's still very tight. But And then they leave you on the border of the Poland, because the border between Poland and Germany is still being guarded, and then you've got to cross it on your own. So the Polish smugglers, they cannot bring you via road, because this road is being monitored by the German security, by the German police. But this border, it's relatively easy to cross. It's just there are like you can just take like and cross it like physically, and this is it. And once they got to Germany, then they apply for asylum.
Why Germany? It seems like they've gotten into Poland, and there are other countries you could head towards. You could go to Lithuania or the Ukraine. I mean, I guess why Germany through Poland? I mean, Germany seems to be the ultimate aim.
Germany, it's for all practical purposes, it's the main destination. They also go to as far as UK, but I'm talking kind of maybe simplistically, but about the main bulk of people, the vast majority of them, and it's not clear about why Germany, but as far as I understand it, there is a perception among them that the Germany and the UK, it's kind of the most friendly part, the most friendly countries for the refugees. So that's why there is a greater chance of receiving asylum. There is economic prosperity there. So, for example, like in Germany, you would make much better living in comparing to Poland, let alone Belarus. So in some, it's economic reasons and the perception of the treatment of the refugees. Hmm.
Gotcha. And if you make it through Poland, then the German border is easy. Right. Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, a very smart person or very smart people are orchestrating this, especially since it might set precedents for borders in general, maybe all through Europe. Can you speak to that more?
So it is a very, very complicated scheme, like it, because there is a crisis which is very easy to create. Like imagine you yourself a dictator who lost an election and nobody wants to talk to you. So what you do, you just make a condition like, okay guys, if previously you could not come to Belarus, but now you can. You can come, it's very easy, very cheap. And by the way, we're creating a new flights for you. So just come to Belarus, and then you can go to Europe very easily, very easily. We prearrange for you like everything. You don't tell them like in your advertisement, you don't tell them directly that you smuggle them to Germany, but you kind of, you make hints. So come to visit like for the tourists, and then you can go. So people come. So this on one hand, this crisis is very easy to create, very, very easy. Literally it took like 3 months, like, to get it full swing. And people paying for you, like the best part of it is like, if you were a dictator, like, I mean, if you imagine yourself a dictator, people are paying you huge amounts of money, like to come, even you can raise up prices for the hotel, like tenfold, threefold, whatever, because you got to spend your first night in the hotel, practically speaking. And it's just, from the dictatorial point of view, it's like there are only pluses in that situation. Like there is an income, there is a crisis for the West. So it's very easy to create. Now, looking from the Western perspective, how to solve it, it's very, very difficult to solve. It's incredibly difficult to solve because there are two extremes in the possible solutions. So how would you solve that crisis? So one possible solution is being tough. So just tell, okay, we build our wall and nobody get cross it. Nobody will cross it, and that's it. Nobody will come through that wall. It is one solution. The problem with that solution, though, is that the other side, they don't care about human lives. They don't care at all. On the opposite, on the contrary, the more people will die in Belarus, it's better for Lukashenko. It's like, you've got to understand, he does not care about human lives. It's like a pawns in chess game. It's like a raw disposable material. He does not treat people as people. So if you're being tough against him, he will overplay you. You cannot be more tough than Lukashenko because, okay, if 10, let's say, deaths per month will not work, then the death rate might increase to 100 per month. If that would not work, he has no boundaries in that regard. So practically speaking, you cannot be tough to solve it. You cannot solve this crisis just by being tough, because sooner or later you cannot be like that tough just to let people die, essentially. On the other hand, you cannot be too kind. Like, if you just say, okay, yeah, we allowed in, so then you create an uncontrolled influx of thousands of migrants, which you cannot process physically. Then the question is, how do you actually solve it? You cannot be tough and you cannot be kind. And in my view, how you can solve it, you've got to combine both approaches. Like, you've got to be very tough to the dictator, to the mastermind, but you've got to be like humane to the people, because it's even on the rational level, like even talking like geopolitics, like these people are not coming back, like literally speaking. They will keep on trying, like if they can. And of course the human dimension, it's even more important. Like it's kind of a pity I even have to discuss this geopolitical, things, but on human dimensions, of course, these people, in my view, should be allowed into Europe, but at the same time, the very tough sanctions should be implemented against the dictators, so more people could not come in. So, because currently their policies try to like destroy the incentive to come for the migrants, but in my view, the policy should be to destroy the incentive for the perpetrator. The dictator should be punished, not people, not his victims. So I would summarize my view that you cannot be humane and tough at the same time. Humane to the victims and tough to the perpetrator. And I would say in that situation, in my view, that's actually, it's a moral obligation to behave like that, because if you are just being quote unquote kind and you let people in, you create precondition for their dictator. You invite him to create more troubles for the people. It's like if you compare it like to terrorist, if you accept all the demands of the terrorist unconditionally, so you make an invitation for the terrorist to create more crimes. So in some sense, as the way I see it, is a part of your responsibility to think about it. Like, you cannot just take people in and that's it. You have to stop the new influx. and how you stop new influx by being tough to the dictator, because the reality is that both Lukashenko and Putin, they are very much dependent on the trade with the West. So the leverage against him is enormous. So the West can, if the leadership would choose, so they can literally destroy the economics of Belarus. They could badly damage the economics of Russia if necessary. It's just the people in the West, they don't use the leverage which they have against the dictator, in my view. So to summarize, you've got to be humane and tough at the same time.
No, that's a great view of the whole situation. And you did mention Putin, of course. And do you think he has a role to play in this? That's one thing I'm not really clear on.
So the involvement of Putin, it's their most difficult part to prove. It's all being done again very in a smart way, I would say. It's all being done through the hands of Lukashenko. Lukashenko Minister of Foreign Affairs who created a possibility to obtain a visa. It's Lukashenko border guards who bring people to the border to cross this border. So everywhere it's Lukashenko, Lukashenko, Lukashenko. But the thing to understand is like Lukashenko is totally dependent on Putin. So if Putin would like to solve that crisis, it would take him like one phone call to like 20 minutes and that's it. The crisis would be magically over because without Russian support, Lukashenko simply cannot sustain economy. And we're talking about like months. So he's fully dependent on Russia without alternatives. But again, in terms of like the direct evidence, like whether Putin is behind it, I believe it is. There is a circumstantial evidence that it fits the narrative. Like, if you look in the grand scheme, like if you think what happened in Ukraine in 2014, if you combine all this, like warfare against Ukraine with that kind of hybrid attack against Poland, it kind of fits the narrative. So that's on the other hand. He supports Lukashenko like on their international arena. So for example, when Chancellor of Germany Merkel, when she called to Putin, he told Merkel, "You've got to talk to Lukashenko directly to solve this crisis." So Merkel asked him, "Can you solve this?" And he answered, like essentially, like no, you've got to talk to Lukashenko. So there are like circumstantial evidence rather, and general setup of their let's say geopolitical arena then which might suggest that Putin is behind that and there is a least provable thing in all this situation. But practically speaking, the politicians like in Poland or in Lithuania, so in the countries which are most affected by this crisis, they just tell it without zero doubt as a fact that, in their opinion, like Putin is behind that. And I tend to second this opinion very strongly, actually.
Yeah. Well, what would, and thanks for all the info that you've given us, because it's something that, well, a lot of people here all over the world, but especially here in America, we are watching this and we're curious. What does Putin have to gain, I think helps kind of understand whether he's involved or not. What's in it for Putin, this whole situation?
So let's kind of divide this discussion into parts. So before
Yes.
that, I was talking facts. Okay, now I will talk opinions. So not
yes.
Facts. So it's just my personal take, which might be wrong. Okay, you've got your warning. So here is my personal take. So in order to understand what's going on, in generally, you've got to listen to Putin. Because he, in his keynote speeches, he described like his opinions and situation, and in one of his recent speech, he told that what his plans are, and his plans are, and the most amazing thing, he actually saying that, and not directly, again, it is my understanding, like he using like hints and that very equivocal language, which could be read in different, like a very evasive language. So I'm just describing how I personally understand it. So what he told in one at one of his recent speeches, that the EU is essentially kind of doomed. So there is no future for the European Union. And he will promote the moderate right ideology. So there, he will fight against LGBTQ, he will try to basically this. He did not actually say that. He did not use this assertive expression. But once again, my understanding that he will try to undermine the EU in order to, and this part he told that the current world order does not work. And in his view, the Russia has to play much more bigger role in the world order. And the agreement about new world order should be made with the participation of Russia with the UN. In UN. So there should be like more a new framework where there should be different big geopolitical players, and Russia would be one of these players, and they would basically decide what the world order should be. By the way, he told like the European Union does not work, like it's a failure. That's what he actually told, like implied very clearly several times during that speech. So, and it's not just one speech, it's just what I'm saying. I'm giving an example where Russian leadership is leaning to. So they want to have a bigger role in the world, like order relationship. So they want to establish their ideology where there is no place for liberal values. And therefore, he tries to prove that liberal values and the world order do not work. By creating this migration crisis, he proves that, okay, these people who call themselves human, like who supports the democratic values, they do not, because they create this border, they do not allow people in. So also this situation, this creates a very deep division in the EU. It's just the people like very, it's a tough situation. So it's there are very, very like irreconcilable positions on that. It all plays in the hand of the Putin, and also he does all that, he gets it kind of for free through, because he himself, Lukashenko acts as a deniable proxy for Putin. So it's the combination of all these factors, it makes it very convenient to use to actually okay, let's call spade a spade, to attack the EU. So that's what Putin actually doing, in my understanding, by the hands of his henchman Lukashenko.
And that makes total sense. It does. I get it. You know, as we say here in America, he's stirring crap up, you know. Exactly. Stirring crap up. Wow. Well, it's been great talking to you. I mean, this really does illuminate the whole situation a lot. And is there anything in closing you might want to mention about the situation?
So maybe one thing to realize that it is there, this entire issue at the border, it's the thing to watch, because expect many more surprises from this Poland-Belarus border. It's not over. Lukashenko is there, Putin is there. They will try to keep on pressure, so do expect more news from that region.
All right. Well, Dennis, thank you for being on the show. Everybody, definitely go over, if you're a Twitter person, and follow Dennis there, DEN_2042. He's got more for you there. He's an active tweeter. He'll keep you up to date on what's going on. So thanks so much, and I will send you a link to this once it's uploaded, or once it's done processing. Take care.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye.